Welcome in to Monday's Daily Tap. It is the 8th. Happy College Football National Championship Day. Happy Monday to all of you. We're back in the cubes, back in the office for the first full week of the year. But for some of us, including me, get off of Martin Luther King Day next week. So it's just a temporary full 5 days. But yes, back to the grind. So hope you guys have all had a good weekend. I had a good one here. It's starting to warm up in Milwaukee, which is nice. And definitely looking forward to a little bit warmer weather this week after like 3 weeks of getting just absolutely killed with cold weather. So it's definitely there. Big show. It was going to be focused mostly on the college football playoff, and then the Packers fucked around and hired a GM, and now we have to at least talk a little bit about that. Then we'll talk about the college football playoff final, and then wrap up what happened on Sunday and what was a crazy weekend in sports, and Sunday proved no differently. So let's talk all about that. Once again, this is the Daily Tap, if you're unfamiliar with it. We are on SnowTapWI. It's on Facebook. It's on Twitter. It's on Instagram. We are also, you know, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. Feel free to hit that subscribe button. I will tell you that we will be tapping the keg on Tuesday night. Mitch and I will be back in the booth cooking, so you will not get a Daily Tap on Wednesday. Look for Mitch and I's hot flames on that day, where we'll also talk about the Gunkus Tire. I'm going to mispronounce his name till kingdom come. But yeah, we'll talk about that as well as everything else under the sun and put a real bow on what's going on. So let's get into it. First of all, we are going to do a little Brian Gunkus talk. Gunkist. You know, I'm German, but what's the problem is you can't sometimes just really can't pronounce German names. So it's going to happen. And Brian's last name is not an easy one. It's not Thompson. It's not like Gunter or Mueller or something like that. It's Gunkist, and I'm going to butcher it the entire night. So I don't know. Do I just call him the Packers new GM? Do I just call him Brian? Whatever way that is. But I guess the first overall question is, what does this mean for the Packers? The Packers decided not to go with Russ Ball. And as I sort of maybe predicted earlier last week, that the Tom Silverstein story was almost like a sort of leading them on and diverting the attention. And then Gunkist hire was interviewing with the Texans, apparently blew them away. The Packers locked him into a 5-year deal, and this guy has been with the organization for 20 years. He comes off the Ted Thompson tree, comes off the Ron Wolf tree. If you read what I wrote earlier today, I made a mention about how I do not think this is going to be a Ted Thompson clone, because everyone is different, and that's what we really have to take away. And people have to do a better job of that. And so hopefully you guys read that. SnowTapWI, it's a website. If you didn't, go check that out after you listen to this. But we're really talking about what he has to do, and what are the big moves that have to be made. Because as a first-year GM, you're going to be under a lot of scrutiny. I mean, people are going to expect the world. That's just what Packer fans do. It's how it goes. And he has major decisions on his hands. And first and foremost is probably getting Aaron Rodgers that contract extension. They're going to try to do this summer. And I think they're really going to try to get to that point so that can kind of set the tone for the rest of the next 3 or 4 years with the Packers organization. Then you look at the wide receiver position, and we talked about this, about Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb both making $9 million. You probably have to figure out what to do with one or both. I think the more I've kind of thought about this, the more, as much as it pains me to think, I think Jordy Nelson might be done. And I think the more we have to look at him just slowing down as a wide receiver, and that Randall Cobb still has a lot of juice left in that tank, still 25 years old, going into a contract year next season, you knock him down maybe $3 or $4 million next year, adds a little motivation. Nelson being cut, I think, would really hurt with Rodgers, and I think that, you know, you don't want to totally upset the best player on your team, but at some point you have to make a call that's right for the team. And the Packers definitely need some improvement at that receiver position. We'll get to sort of moves that need to be made by Gunkist as the year goes on. Brian Bulaga is another name that I don't think is getting talked enough about a guy who could potentially, you know, be released. And I know that Justin McCray is a guard, and I don't think Justin McCray is a tackle of the future, But you have to take a long look at Bulaga just from the perspective of this is a loaded lineman draft. It is full of offensive linemen that could readily fill the shoes here. And then also as well is he just keeps getting hurt. He can't stay healthy. And you have to wonder, you know, with an out in his contract, because he's also up in 2019, you know, maybe it's time to set sail on that. And so I looked at, you know, what the you may have seen it on Twitter today, but I looked at what the Jacksonville Jaguars have done with their defense. And the Jaguars have done a fantastic job of building through the draft as well as getting some big-name free agents. They signed A.J. Boye. They signed Malik Jackson. They signed Calais Campbell, all the big deals. Barry Church, Gibson's another guy who they signed to a smaller deal. So they had some of these big free agents like Campbell and Jackson. And then they had some of the lesser free agents, and then they've drafted Jalen Ramsey, Miles Jack, and a few others. Now, Packers will never get a Jalen Ramsey type. They're not going to be that bad where they're going to get an impact player like Jalen Ramsey. But where they're drafting is right around where the Rams drafted Aaron Donald years ago, and Aaron Donald's one of the best players in football. So it is possible for the Packers to get an impact player on this defense, and that I don't know where Gunkust is going to look, but I do think it has to maybe be a defender. It could be a corner. You know, I saw Denzel Ward. You know, we'll see if he looks there. We'll see about names. I mean, it's way too early for us to start talking about who's going to be the draft pick and what Green Bay is going to look towards. But they have to take advantage of that high draft pick, and even if possible, move up in the draft to try to really get a impact player who's going to make a day one impact with this team, because that's very important. And I think it starts with the defense, but it is the best player available as well, and you want to make sure that's known for. So then, yes, the free agent market is somewhere where the Packers, I think, need to send money. What we've seen more and more, and I think you just have to look at guys from a position of age, skill set, and will they deteriorate as it goes on, and not give them these big, long deals so that they can just sort of sit on their hands. Because, you know, the Giants, even though they were really bad this year, and I get that, but the Giants did mold together a defense last year with free agent signings, like from Damon Harrison to Olivier Vernier. I mean, they had Janoris Jenkins is another one. So I think more and more teams are finding ways to spend money on defense, and that being the way to do it, versus spending money for skilled positions and spending money for guys who maybe are just over the hill. I saw the other thing that was kind of pointed out this week with Aaron Nagler was how the Packers have the slowest wide receivers in the league. And you look at a guy like Ted Ginn today, and you're like, whoa, that should be a guy in the Packers. They need a speed receiver. And Trevor Davis sure as hell is not that player. So Gunkus needs to take a long look at this roster and really see who are guys that are willing to keep around and take a shot on. And then also, who are players that maybe he never really saw what's the big deal with them and make a statement. Because I think he's going to do some different things than Thompson. It's just natural. And we'll see what ends up happening that is different. And will A.A. Wolf stay? That's the million-dollar question. I think there's not a lot of GM openings right now. I think Wolf probably stays on this year. I don't know if he lasts past next year, though. I think they'll let him set sail. They'll let him take another job, and he'll go do whatever he needs to do. So I wouldn't be surprised if Wolf stays for one more year, but that's kind of where I see it. I don't think Thompson's going to have much influence. I think we have to get out of that theory as well. The fact is like he's going to be like what Doug Melvin was. Remember, Doug Melvin is still like a senior advisor to David Stearns, and I think Doug Melvin hasn't done dicks in like 3 years. So think of it that way. If you're not a Brewers fan, just Doug Melvin basically had the same thing happen. He got reassigned. They bring in this young guy, David Stearns, complete outsider to the Brewers organization, so unlike Gunkust in that way. But then Melvin wasn't really part of any of those decisions. So that's how I think it's going to happen with the Packers. Some people, you know, have wondered if this makes any difference with Mike McCarthy and the fact that these two have a good relationship together. I don't think McCarthy's going to add any more influence, but I do think it helps that in a guy who's got a one-year extension, he's good through 2019, that he has a good working relationship with the front office, because the last thing you want is those guys at odds. And you know, that's really it. And that and everyone seems to think that the Packers got a home run here, and I'm willing to believe them. But as we've seen with, I've been saying all along with this GM search, it's all a crapshoot. No matter who they brought in, it's a complete roll of the dice. So we'll see what happens. I'm very interested to see the moves made when the new year for the NFL in March turns and see what happens. So it definitely is stuff to look forward to. I'm sure it's not the last we talk about this stuff as well. So moving on to the big game tonight, the SEC showdown between Alabama and Georgia in Atlanta, Georgia, in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So big-time game, big SEC moment. And the big question I think everyone has on their mind is, does anyone actually give a shit about this game? Like, man, I'm having trouble getting myself like fired up for this game. And I get that these are probably two of the best teams. I'm not disputing that at all. But the fact is just there's no like extra reason to do that. If we had Baker Mayfield versus the Alabama defense versus Nick Saban, I think everyone is all in. I think there is some massive hype around this. But instead it's Georgia, and Georgia has, you know, Sony Michel and Nick Chubb, and can they penetrate the Alabama defense? But it's just sort of like it has no juice. There's no extra angle to it that really brings in that casual fan interest. I'm still going to watch. There's a ton of talent. I mean, there are going to be draft picks all over the field. I mean, Raekwon Smith is one of the best linebackers you'll watch. Calvin Ridley is going to be a top 15 receiver, maybe a guy that some people think the Packers could potentially get. There are going to be guys that are worth watching in this football game. But at the same time, it's not necessarily a premier main event college football affair. So how does Georgia beat Alabama? And I think the way Georgia beats Alabama is, A, they control the ball with Chubb and Michelle. They can't play tight. Jake Fromm, freshman quarterback, looked fine against Oklahoma, looked cool as ice. But the Alabama defense is much different. This is a much higher stakes. It's in his home state of Georgia. The pressure will be enormous. He cannot make an early mistake to make a Fitzpatrick or one of the other Alabama defenders, or it could be an early blowout here for the Tide. And Alabama just, you know, needs to play their game. You know, their offense has stalled at different points of the season, and Jalen Hurts he's kind of like JT Barrett of the South. Like he wins games, but he doesn't really do anything that just blows you away. And you know, Bo Scarborough, decent running back. They have skill. It's just Alabama is collectively better than Georgia. I think Georgia has, you know, more of the standout star players that you're going to see on Sundays and hear about more often. It's hard to really take anyone but Alabama. The bettors are loading up. All the sharps are hitting Alabama because the stats don't lie. Nick Saban is so good against his assistant coaches. He's 11-0. He has some absurd winning margin against these guys. He just knows every move. And a guy like Kirby Smart, you could even say the deck stacked more against Smart because he's a defensive mind. He was a defensive mind. He worked as a defensive coordinator under Saban. Saban is a defensive coach first. So that those two probably work even closer together than, let's say, a guy like Lane Kiffin or Steve Sarkisian or any of the offensive coordinators in the past for Alabama. So this could be a more ugly game than I think people are expecting. And I'm going to roll with Alabama taking this one, getting their sixth national championship. They're going to win 27-13. It is not going to be that close. It is going to maybe be 27-7. There's really not going to be a ton of interest in this game after Alabama sort of just runs through. I think Fromm's going to look tight, and I think mistakes are going to happen. And that's why I'm taking Alabama, and it's going to suck. I think no one likes a year where Alabama wins, but it's how it goes. And Saban will then etch himself as probably the best coach in college football history. And we'll have to live with that, and just sort of the beat rolls on, and another year of Alabama's dominance. I mean, what Alabama's doing, don't get me wrong, is very impressive. And you can argue maybe Alabama didn't deserve to be here. Fact that they got in just because Ohio State beat Wisconsin, and that's such a crazy thing to think about, is if Wisconsin got into the dance, would this be a game? Could it have possibly been Wisconsin versus Georgia? Could it have possibly been Wisconsin versus Oklahoma, given the seeding might have worked out a little differently? You know, could this have been the biggest game in Badger football history? Who knows? Who really knows? I mean, that's definitely something that I think guys like Alex Hornibrook and Jonathan Taylor and certainly Paul Crist and any of the seniors are going to wonder watching this game tonight. And I think, too, and I'm not going to get on my soapbox here, Ohio State would have gotten over Wisconsin just from winning the Big Ten. But I think Ohio State and the Big Ten as a whole, minus Michigan, proved that they'd probably deserve to be in there versus two SEC teams. And I think I'm fine with the playoff staying at four, and I get it. And I made the comment earlier, or I think after New Year's Day, like, hey, it's okay that there are two SEC teams. These are two of the best teams. They are. I think it just puts the focus on the fact that this was a special year where there were probably six teams deserving of four spots. And unfortunately, you can only have four, and that's that. And now you have to live with the fact, you know, because if Ohio State's playing Georgia tomorrow night, I think people are saying probably the same stuff about how, well, this should have been Alabama and we should have got an all-SEC final and we'll never really know how good Alabama is, because that would guarantee you they would have blown the doors off USC if they were to play. And so we'll just have to see what happens. And yeah, I'm going to take Alabama big. I don't really see how Georgia wins this game. I think they're going to struggle and it's not going to look good. All right, we're running a little long here, which is okay. It's a Monday. We got a lot to cover. Recapping the weekend real quick from a sports perspective, playoff games on Sunday were a little different than Saturday, especially starting with that Jaguars-Bills game, which turned into that 11 a.m. ESPN2 Big Ten game with Pam Ward on the call. Maybe like an Indiana versus a Northwestern. Cloudy skies. I mean, really all you needed was just, yeah, that was pretty much it. And it was a Big Ten struggle. Blake Bortles rushing for 88 yards, throwing for only 87, but he got the job done. Did not throw any interceptions. And the Jaguars are able to beat the Bills in advance and have a chance to play the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the Jags defense stood tall once again. And it was an impressive win. And I admire Jacksonville's defense. I really think what they've put together is fantastic and should be something we look at more often. And I think they can beat Pittsburgh. Call me crazy. They did it once already. I think the way they rush the quarterback with Big Ben and he's, if he takes a lot of hits, it's going to be flustered. So very interesting to see that game. We'll talk more as the week goes on, but that's definitely there. And then the Bills, you know, they have a young roster. The future is bright. We'll see what they do with Tyrod Taylor. I think Tyrod should probably put his double fingers up and go somewhere else, because it's a good year for a quarterback to be looking for a contract, with many teams kind of searching for their next quarterback and probably paying him pretty well. The other game, Saints-Panthers, that game got good real quick. Panthers never actually led. If they would have converted more field goals and touchdowns, this might be a different story. We might be talking about the Panthers playing the Vikings instead of the Saints. But the Saints get it done. They let Drew Brees go off. They decided to shut down Kamara and Ingram, probably the first team to actually do it. They put him down to 41 yards together. Brees threw for 376, his best game of the season. He found Mike Thomas for 8 catches, 31 yards. Ted Ginn, 4 catches, 115, including a great 80-yard touchdown that kind of broke the game open. So what'll be the big story from the game, though, is the Cam Newton. He leaves for a second. He apparently had a concussion. I mean, that hit was, there's not a lot of hits nowadays where I just kind of go, ooh, like I shouted something out and I knew that was a really bad hit. And the fact that he came back in so quickly is going to just be scrutinized. Everyone's going to play doctor. I get how it goes. We'll just hear all those dumb takes for a few days. And yeah, I mean, the NFL is living recklessly, but should we really be surprised? So the Carolina Panthers are eliminated and the Saints now play the Vikings, which is probably the best game of the weekend. That game is going to be bananas. Should get a lot of Favre throwing those interceptions, a little Bounty Gate talk maybe. I'm just going to love, maybe get a Paul Allen depressed, hit him in the 2-6. We're not playing Detroit. We're playing for the Super Bowl, man. Oh, man, just love Paul Allen. Nothing's better than a depressed Paul Allen. If we do get that, I'm probably going to just light a fire, maybe a cigar, nice bottle of red, and just listen to it over and over again, because that's really where the money's at. And then the last final note, Dustin Johnson, how about it, runs away with the first PGA Tour victory of the season. He goes 24 under. His closest competition was 8 back. He completely separated himself from the pack here today, just stroking his driver. He 433 yards to the tin. He nearly hits a hole and run on a par 4. The guy was out of his mind. So good things to come for DJ. Good way to start his season. He will definitely be a favorite in most of the tournaments he's in. He's the best golf. To me, I said this last year, not really in like podcast, and so I wrote a little bit about golf. He's the best golfer in the game. I mean, golf's in a beautiful spot. This is why golf's worth talking about every week. But if I had to say who is your top four at this point, my top four is probably Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, and Ricky Fowler. And I think that four spot can definitely be interchanged, but I think that's what we're looking at right now to start the season. And I'm not sure if DJ is playing the Sony Open next week. I think Fowler is, and maybe Spieth. Sony Open's still a decent tournament. And then we'll get to the Farmers Insurance in 2 weeks, which will feature Tiger Woods as well as Jon Rahm and a few others. So that should be a hell of a tournament. Golf is, like I said, if you're not, I know golf's kind of a tough sport to get into, but it's one of those sports that there's enough star power there that's worth you guys taking a look on Saturdays and Sundays, because that, it's just awesome. So anyways, we'll wrap this up. We'll talk again Monday night. Probably not a lot of reality TV talk. I know I said Mondays will be there. I'll probably watch a little bit of The Bachelor. I think my girlfriend's coming over, so I have The Bachelor rolling on the TV while I watch the football game on my computer. And so maybe we'll squeeze in a little Bachelor talk at the end of the podcast next week, tomorrow, but we'll be mostly talking about the college football playoff game. Hopefully we get a better game than I'm predicting, because then we'll at least have a lot to talk about. And then also the Bucks do play Indiana, so that will also be a focal point. So we shall talk to you tomorrow, Tappers. Take care. Find us on all the channels, SnowTapWI, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Subscribe on iTunes. Let's have a good Monday. See you.